House Committee on Energy and Environment will come to order. And I don't know if any of you have ever thrown a party and nobody came, but it's kind of how I'm feeling right now. Oh, look at that. There we go. But we have a lot on the agenda, so we'll want to get started right away. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2437. Adam?
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, House Bill 2437 provides a definition of energy efficient home, homeowner, and HERS index, allows homeowner of energy efficient home with HERS index score to claim tax credit upon acceptance of application for certificate given by Oregon Department of Energy, stipulates tax credit must be claimed between January 1st, 2013 and before January 1st, 2019, sets guidelines for when credit may be claimed by homeowner and how much can be claimed, allows the Oregon Department of Energy to establish by rule standards and practices determining homeowner tax eligibility for tax credit, allows Oregon Department of Energy to establish by rule standards for HERS index, takes effect 91 days after signing day.
Call up Vincent Martinez, Jeff Bissonette, and Maureen Buck, please. We'll let Mr. Martinez go first. We have a handout coming around. Mr. Martinez, we're appreciative for the time you took to travel to this committee here today, so thank you.
Thank you for having me. So I am the Director of Research and Operations for Architecture 2030.
And your name for the record, please.
Vincent Martinez. Director of Research and Operations for Architecture 2030. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank research organization based in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Our organization has performed an analysis of the bill to understand the job creation tax dollars that would bring back, as well as the new construction spending of this bill. What we've found is that for every dollar that is spent in an incentive, it would generate about $15 worth of new construction. And those $15 would then bring back over a dollar incentive of tax revenue for the state. So essentially, the bill will pay for itself with the new construction money as from coming back from the taxes. It will also create about 240 jobs per $1 million, as well as an additional incentive dollars coming back in terms of tax revenue from the induced spending after it goes through in the economy.
And perhaps, Mr. Martinez, you could back up just a little bit and talk a little bit about the concept in the bill and what you see it doing and the intention behind it.
Sure. We've seen in the past with the first-time homebuyers tax credit, the federal incentive that started in January of 2009, that it essentially halted the decline in new sales of homes as well as existing homes. And once that, it was approximately about 25% increase in new home sales due to that tax incentive. Now, what we found is that there was no additional construction spending tied to that original incentive. So what this bill would do is tie construction spending to a similar type of credit. In Oregon, specifically during that period for the first-time homebuyers tax credit, we had over 32,000 Oregon first-time homebuyers take advantage of that credit. But because it was not tied to home construction, there was very little private spending and therefore very little tax dollars associated. So this bill is very similar to that type of approach, but adds in an energy efficiency component for every reduction in energy efficiency.
Great. Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of, because you got into the new home construction and everything, and I'm wondering if you ran into issues with the bar moving on what an energy certified home would be, because I just built a new home and it was supposed to be an Energy Star certified home, but then they raised the bar after I'd started construction and had the materials like at the last month and was unable to get certification. So has that been an issue with some of these programs that you've seen, where people then walking into the project thinking they'll get the tax credit and then all of a sudden they can't because the bar was moved after they started the project?
Thank you, Representative. That's a great question. The HERS index would be predefined within the legislation, which is now the International Energy Conservation Code in 2004, so that would remain the same baseline. So anybody taking advantage of the credit would know what the baseline was ahead of time, and then the HERS rating is set from that baseline. So the HERS 50 is a 50% reduction from that code equivalent. So the code equivalent would not change based off of what the legislation was.
Thank you. Mr. Bissonnette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We represent residential ratepayers of utilities, do a lot of work around energy efficiency. Ratepayers in PG and Pacific Core Territory pay a good chunk in their rates toward energy efficiency, but it's a very good investment because the cheapest kilowatt hour is the one you don't have to produce in the first place. We also try and look at how we combine ratepayers investment and taxpayer investment to really, you know, work together to get more efficiency for the system. And so with this bill, we're interested in it, understand that there's going to be more work done on it. Just wanted to indicate our interest in it and happy to be involved in work on the bill moving forward. Happy to answer questions at this time, but mainly hope to be back in front of you again as this process moves forward.
Thank you. Ms. Bach.
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, my name is Maureen Bach. I run the Energy Incentives Program at the Oregon Department of Energy. And this bill, as committee administrator indicated, creates a new tax credit for energy-efficient homes, and it would be administered by the Department of Energy. I've submitted written testimony that actually goes into some depth, and I won't go through and read that. You can read that for yourselves. But for the purposes of administration, it would be helpful to us if this were consistent with our other tax credits. And so I've enumerated a number of ways in which it would become more similar if it were to move forward, and that would make it easier to administer. For example, there isn't anything in this bill about revocation if someone doesn't meet or they assert something that we find not to be true. There's not a lot of guidance on what to do in the case of renovations, and so that would be helpful to have that more fully fleshed out for us. There's also nothing about carry forward, which is something that we have in some of our tax credits. So if an individual cannot use the credit, it can be carried forward into subsequent years. So those are some of the suggestions that I would have for changing the bill if it were to move. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. And could you also just speak a little bit about the overlap or lack thereof with the Red Sea or other energy efficiency programs?
This does have a provision that says someone cannot claim a residential energy tax credit if they have improved their home through an alternative energy device. So that would be some kind of special. Let me give you some examples. Like they put on a solar voltaic system to improve their energy. They introduced a ductless heat pump, for example, to improve the efficiency of their home. So they could claim one or the other, but not both.
Questions for this panel? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who to address it to, but a few questions about how are you defining a home? What, a condo? Also qualify under the terms of this? And what about a multifamily dwelling, duplex, triplex, fourplex, apartment complex?
Chair Bailey, Vice Chair Johnson, I guess I'll take a shot at that. It's defined as an owner-occupied single-family dwelling. And so I'm assuming that that could be any one of those things.
Okay.
But it has to be owner-occupied.
Okay. Follow-up, please. And is there in view then a credit, I'm trying to decipher here, a credit for additions or remodels or whatever to altering of the existing home that fits within certain criteria, would it qualify for credit, but also the purchasing of an already qualified home or dwelling? Is that true? Is both construction and owner-performed modifications, let's say, and purchase of a dwelling that meets the criteria. Is that correct?
Mr. Johnson, members of the committee, the bill does have some criteria for claiming the credit, and that is the energy-efficient tax credit cannot have been claimed for the same home before, and it has to have a HERS rating of 50 or lower, and there has to be a certificate of occupancy. There isn't a lot of guidance for us on what to do in the case of a renovation.
Okay. Thank you.
Please.
Representative Johnson. Also, we would suggest including a baseline minimum for that renovation. So we suggest something around a HERS 75 so that the renovation actually has an improvement, so someone isn't claiming the credit without with only performing a smaller renovation. We want to see a larger renovation in this type of case in order to generate the new construction spending.
Thank you. Representative Whitsitt.
Yes, I was wondering if the workers, construction workers, et cetera, are going to have to work at union wage if the state allows this tax credit, i.e., the state, like schools. Are you expecting this to be tied to the unions and jobs?
Sure. The Raiders, sorry, thank you, Representative. The Raiders would have to have HERS. ResNet is a national organization that certifies the Raiders for that HERS, which is Home Energy Rating System, is what the HERS system is. And so they will define who can be qualified as a HERS Raiders. I don't know the direct answer to your question about whether or not they have to meet union wages. That would be a question for the ResNet.
Perhaps we can have the have staff follow up on that. Great. Okay, thank you all very much. Appreciate it. And Mr. Chandler, would you like to join us, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. Here on 2437, we would obviously like to be part of any future work on this should the committee decide to move the bill forward. We represent both residential new construction and remodeling in this state. I have on my staff both green building experts, codes experts, and other people that actually know what they're talking about. I'm just decorative on this issue. But we obviously would be very interested in any sort of tax credit for our members, because that would be very helpful to the industry. I think this bill, as you've heard, has some concerns about the details. Should you decide to move it, we'd be happy to participate in fixing it up.
Great.
We'd be glad to take questions.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Seeing no further testimony, close the public hearing on House Bill 2437. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2793. Okay.
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, House Bill 2793 defines residential building, instructs the Oregon Housing and Community Services, or OHCS, in consultation with the Oregon Department of Energy, to adopt by rule standards for assessment of energy performance scores for buildings, requires those selling residential buildings to have and disclose energy performance scores prior to finalization of the sale of the home, requires OHCS to retain one or more private contractors paid for from the Clean Energy Deployment Fund to conduct energy audits, assign energy performance scores, conduct educational campaigns regarding the program, advise owners about ways to improve the energy their energy scores, provide advice regarding financial options available for energy efficiency, evaluate bids for building contractors regarding bids for energy efficiency improvements, work with lenders providing financing, requires OHCS to make energy performance scores available to the public, modifies uses of the Clean Energy Deployment Fund, creates a tax credit for taxpayers using energy performance services, takes effect in 91 days following signing day.
Call up Ann Gravett, Jana Gastelum, and Stephen Kafori or Don McCodrum. Which do you both want to come up in a panel? Okay. How about Ann Gravett, Jana Gastelum, and Jeff Bissonnette again for the first panel?
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Gravett. I'm the Oregon Director of Climate Solutions. Climate Solutions is a regional clean energy economy nonprofit focused on practical and profitable solutions to global warming. The policy underlying House Bill 2793, creating energy disclosure for homeowners' home performance scores, is exactly that. Like, it's the mission of Climate Solutions. It's a practical and profitable solution to global warming. This kind of policy offers many benefits, reduced energy use, reduced greenhouse gas emissions, saving homeowners money, making homes more comfortable for homeowners, creating real local jobs and building repair, remodeling, weatherization, that kind of thing. We also believe this would help the governor achieve his goal of meeting load growth with energy efficiency. We have specific feedback about the details of this bill. We understand that there will be ongoing discussions, and we look forward to being part of those as this moves forward this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gastelum.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jana Gastelum. I'm the Climate Protection Program Director at the Oregon Environmental Council. We're very supportive of energy performance scores. Oregonians spend billions of dollars heating, lighting, and energizing their homes. But a lot of that money really could be used in other ways to help really spur more economic development in Oregon. And right now, energy consumers really don't have easy access to information about operating costs for homes. And this makes it very difficult to do comparison shopping when you're out in the marketplace. I am one of those potential home buyers right now, and I'm trying to be responsible in understanding the operating costs for my home and what that means to my monthly payments. And it's very, very difficult to find that information in a consistent manner. Simply looking up utility bill data is inadequate because it really skews towards the individual tenants who maybe previously occupied that home. If they had multiple TVs or refrigerators, that would indicate a higher energy use than maybe a normalized operating for that building. And so a score like this really creates a much better tool in that marketplace that you can better assess what that operating cost will be, and then it also helps you know what cost-effective improvements could be made to a home. So we're very supportive of those concepts. We think that the energy efficiency sector in Oregon has been one that's added a lot of value economically. The Oregon Green Jobs Council estimates that there are about 12,000 people employed in Oregon and nearly 1,500 Oregon-based companies. That's been kind of a bright light in Oregon's economy, but we can still do more to help spur that sector along. And we know that when energy is saved anywhere, it benefits all energy consumers. When we save dollars, we can avoid building new power plants, building new distribution lines, and that creates cost savings for everyone. And in fact, the Energy Trust of Oregon estimates that for every $1 invested in energy efficiency, we save $4 in avoided costs. So energy performance really empowers people to make the best decisions for their pocketbooks. It creates demand for skilled labor, and it's a fundamental tool for helping scale energy efficiency in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bissonnette.
Again, Jeff Bissonnette for the Citizens Utility Board, representing residential ratepayers. Don't have a lot to add to my colleagues here at the bench. I will say that energy disclosure we see as a very good consumer policy, giving people the information that they need, especially when making what is in most cases the biggest purchase that a consumer is ever going to make. And having a sense of what the operating cost for that purchase is going to be over time is pretty useful. Again, it's helping to support the investments that ratepayers are making in energy efficiency and driving it from a policy standpoint, and having policy and you know, ratepayer money, ratepayer investment working together is a very good thing. Like Ms. Gravett, we have, you know, some questions and some thoughts about some of the details of the bill. Would like to be involved if this bill moves forward in talking about that, but overall very supportive of the concept and would appreciate the chance to be involved. Thank you. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Representative Whitsitt.
I was wondering if you could describe, for those of us who are new, what the Housing and Community Services Department is exactly and what the Clean Energy Deployment Fund is.
Mr. Bissonnette.
Chair Bailey, Representative Whitsitt, taking those questions in order, the Department of Housing and Community Services both builds affordable housing and also provides a variety of services primarily targeted toward very low-income folks. Among those is energy assistance and low-income weatherization services. Frankly, it's one of the questions we have is at the agency that should be overseeing it. And, you know, I think there's a case to be made on both sides, and so we'd, you know, like to have the opportunity to talk that through. In terms of the Green Energy Deployment Fund, I believe that was created through House Bill 2626.
2960,
sorry. I was really going to look smart and failed miserably on that.
Do it every day.
But it's basically a fund that was set up to receive a variety of income to be directed toward, this type of green building, green energy deployment and development.
Can I follow up?
Please.
What are the sources of the fund?
We represent the Clean Energy Deployment Fund. It's an open fund that lives at the Oregon Department of Energy. There are no dedicated sources of revenue into the Clean Energy Deployment Fund. However, it has a large, it has a broad receipts authority for various kinds of revenue that go there. It is a fund that currently includes revenues from the pre-sale of auctions for tax credits for renewable energy incentives. There are some dollars that have been directed there through the Cool Schools program. There's an amalgam of different funds there, but there's no dedicated revenue stream there. Representative Whitener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of going through the bill here. So my understanding, this, anybody who's selling a residential house would have to get an energy score?
That's right.
How would this be paid for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, right now there's the Energy Trust of Oregon has been running a pilot program to, you know, figure out how a system like this would work and indeed what it would cost. Those costs have been coming down over the last few years. Right now, I will check to make sure that I'm remembering this correctly, but my memory is that it's in the couple hundred dollar range to get the to get the score, which would be and you're going to have folks coming up after us, kind of coming from the industry, that can give you a better sense of what goes into those costs. But right now, I think the price tag is around a couple hundred dollars.
So, let's just say my house is in foreclosure. I don't have any money. Would I have to come up with $200 to try and put my house on the market because I don't want it to go into complete foreclosure, or where right now I just list it with a real estate agent and don't have to pay anything?
Chair Bailey, Representative Widener, I think that that's an excellent point and an issue that we are definitely kind of focused on, given, you know, the driver of this great recession that we're either coming out of or are still in, depending on your perspective. And so I think that is one of the issues that we'd have to deal with in, as part of the conversation of is this every house, or are there some houses that would be an exception? We obviously want to get the most houses that we could. At the same time, there are financial realities, and so I think that would be part of the give and take of any kind of discussion on putting together a bill that could potentially pass the legislature and end up on the governor's desk.
Representative Banks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what's the vision of this scoring device? I know in the house sales we handle, we generally ask if we're representing the buyer that the sellers bring in copies of their electrical statements and other things that have to do with energy. What do you anticipate this report would look like?
Chair Bailey, Representative Benz, I think what we're, you know, looking at is a complete picture of the operating cost of the house. I think, again, having energy bills and that sort of thing are helpful, but may not be as complete. And so I think that it's an educational tool for both the consumer or potential buyer, but also a seller as well, who may be able to say, I've made investments in this house. It is more efficient than other houses you'd find on the market, and that could be a selling point. Or they could say, you know, if I made a little bit of investment, you know, I could make that as a selling point. I think it works both ways on both buyers and sellers. But again, I think the thrust is to really make a, or give the buyer in particular, but I think the seller as well, a full and complete picture of the energy operating costs of that particular house.
Ms. Gustam, do you want to add anything to that?
Oh, thank you, Chair and Representative. I just wanted to share a quick anecdote from my own personal experience recently. At least in the Portland housing market. It's a very low inventory, so it's a very competitive market right now. And in the process of trying to be responsible and know what my operating costs are, I wanted to inquire about what the energy costs for a home that we were interested in would be. And because it's such a tight market, I was actively discouraged from even making the inquiry in fear of losing a bid on a house. And so while some information may be available in some places, it's not consistent, and in some cases it's actively discouraged. So you mentioned having utility bills available, but that's not always necessarily the case. As to what the score would look like, it's called an asset rating. So you look at the building envelope, you look at major fixtures and appliances, and you normalize it for conditions for kind of a standard occupant household, as well as normalized weather. And that really allows you to be able to do comparisons across housing types and taking out that sort of occupant behavior aspect of it.
Well, the disclosure statement that one fills out under our statute we passed here is 6 or 8 pages long and requires a great deal of disclosure, if one can use that phrase, and if done appropriately, would give you 80%, I'm guessing, of what this $200 would add. And so I'm concerned that because of the incredibly wide difference in housing, all different types, different shapes, different sizes, different windows, different roofs, different everything, shrubbery around it, by the time you get done taking into account all of those, you'll have something similar to our disclosure statement, 6 or 8 pages long. And I don't know, what then I'm anticipating would happen is we would engage in a rulemaking exercise that would culminate in any number of subsets of houses and probably a rating system of some sort, broken into categories of really, really bad or kind of good, or I have no idea. But this is the type of rulemaking I think we can anticipate, and this is what I'm really asking. Because I don't envision a simple little piece of paper, because we have too wide a variation of housing stock. It's been my experience, but I'm happy to hear what you folks are thinking.
So maybe if you want to comment briefly on it, and then our next panel will have some practitioners who put together these kinds of scores and rating systems who might be able to talk a little bit about some of the direct process behind it.
Sure. Chair Bailey, Representative Bentz, I'll take one stab at it, but certainly would defer to others. From my perspective, it isn't just about creating additional paper at closure. When you close on a house, you sign untold numbers of papers, and adding another piece of paper at that process isn't just the point. The hope for a policy like this is to drive those investments in the home by the homeowner that do all the things that we talk about, that save the energy, that make the home more comfortable. So the hope is with a policy like this, it encourages homeowners to make these investments, knowing when they go to sell their house, they will be disclosing information beyond just what their electric and gas bills are. The jobs only come if homeowners are incented by the policy to make the investments in their home, and these investments bring so many other benefits other than just that you have to tell someone exactly what your energy use in your home is. It will make the home a nicer place not to have to wear a ski cap in the winter or sleep in the basement in the summer because of a poorly insulated home.
Chair Bailey, Representative Bentz, real quickly. The goal is to provide a prospective buyer and the seller too, for that matter, a piece of paper that has a number on it, and the lower the number, the better your score is. I don't play golf, but sort of like golf. And so, while you certainly have a lot of supporting information behind that, the intent has been, in some of the pilots that the Energy Trust has run, has worked to condense the information and put a lot of useful information on a sheet of paper. Again, much like you go to the store and you have an Energy Star label and you can get a sense of what the operating cost will be, based on where it is on a spectrum, the goal is to really provide, such a label, if you will, for a house.
Well, please. We've had this debate before, several years ago, and maybe even longer than that. And the shift that generally occurs is the buyer comes in, sees the rating, and it would be tempting to talk about how different houses are as compared to refrigerators, but having made that point already, I'll just go to the fact that maybe the buyer comes in and sees that the rating is low. So buyer's market, seller's market, one of, depending upon which, is going to end up using that as leverage. So there's going to be concern about the quality of the study, and it'll become a debating point in the purchase and the sale of the house. And so I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I'm just very interested in hearing how what sort of quality one can get for $200. Because the cost of all of that, which would make your house so much nicer, is considerable, and that would become a shift in the negotiation of price. So that's what I'm anxious to hear from the next panel as to their opinion of that, the impact of the device you're suggesting.
Can I quickly comment?
Please.
Chair, Representative Vance, I think that's an excellent point, and one of the things as this bill progresses, if there's an opportunity to work on it, I think would be to add some quality assurance aspects. So what are the qualifications for people who can assess a home and produce a score and make sure that those are rigorous and so people have confidence in the score? I think that's a very important point.
Representative Reed.
I'm assuming that this applies to old or existing homes and new ones.
That's the intention, I believe, of this bill, Representative.
Follow-up?
Please.
How does the square footage of the home, how would that affect the score?
Chair Bailey, Representative Reardon, I'd actually ask that you talk to the professional folks that are coming up, because that is, the score is, you know, takes in a lot into account, including square footage, and so I would ask that you direct that question to the professional panel that's coming up.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Call up David Heslam, Don McOdrum, and Stephen Cafori, please. Mr. Heslam, why don't you kick us off?
Thank you, Chair Bailey and members of the committee. My name is David Heslam. I'm the executive director with Earth Advantage. We're a nonprofit institute based in Portland, Oregon, that's been serving building professionals around the state of Oregon and in other parts of the country for the past 8 years. We build tools and supply certification systems to the building industry. And over the last 5 years, we've been involved with the development of the energy performance score system that's being utilized by the Energy Trust of Oregon here in the state of Oregon. And since 2010, we've actually been involved in other states, the state of Massachusetts, Virginia, Alabama, Washington, and now actually have practitioners using a tool to do assessments of homes, and along with that, it delivers energy scores for those homes. We have practitioners using that in about 18 states across the country now. So we are really strong believers that providing this type of information, as Jana from OEC mentioned, an asset rating for a home that removes the occupant behavior from the home and allows you to analyze just, you know, the sticks and bricks, you know, what kind of shell does it have, what kind of equipment does it have in it, that providing that type of information to homeowners in a variety of different instances, at time of sale, also at the time when they're considering making improvements to a home, is really invaluable information to supply to them. It actually, to get back to Representative Bent's point, there's information provided in disclosure, but the information provided in disclosure may be very detailed and very lengthy. The idea of the reports that would come along with the energy performance score are actually to synthesize that information, provide it in the simplest terms possible for the people involved in a transaction of thinking about improving a home or selling a home or buying a home in terms they can understand. What are the bill savings from doing improvements like? What are the estimated bills for this house under normal occupant behavior? So the clear thing is synthesizing it, Additionally, the systems that have been developed over the last 5 years have been developed around the optimization of the data that is considered. What are the data points in a house that really do drive the overall energy performance of that house? And so what has been developed over time is a system that requires less data, but has a much more accurate sense of what the overall performance of the building is. I'd be happy to answer any other technical questions that folks have about, you know, the software systems that have been developed and trainings that have been developed for folks that actually do deliver these services.
Thank you. Let's go through the panel and then we'll take questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Gaffori, and I'm not often called a member of a professional panel, so I'm a little taken aback. Thank you for the compliment. I'm just a poor lobbyist, and I represent an organization called the Home Performance Contractors Guild of Oregon. We are the folks who actually are in people's homes doing these performance scores and making the homes more efficient so that they can get a better performance score. And I have with me the executive director of that organization, Don McGodrum.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Don McGodrum. I am the executive director of the Home Performance Guild of Oregon. And I represent approximately 50 home performance contractors. These are the folks that go into a home and run diagnostics to evaluate how it's performing, how the shell is performing relative to the mechanicals of the house, and they are supported by the rest of the stakeholders that make up the bulk of our the remainder of our organization: the distributors, the manufacturers, trainers that train the folks in how to make these diagnostic evaluations of the homes, as well as banks and other service providers that are part of the supply chain of these energy efficiency retrofits. The energy performance score is as you've heard here today, is a asset rating of the building. We relate it very often to a miles per gallon, except in some ways you can sort of flip it and say it's more of a gallons per mile. So ultimately we want to have a 0 gallon per mile car, and that's what we want in our home. We want to have not everyone's going to have solar panels on their car and be able to get a zero, but ultimately the point is you want to have your home consuming as little as possible, so it's conceivable that if you ever did get solar panels, you could bring it down to zero. But a very low score is the ideal. So our home performance contractors are the ones that do the evaluations of where that house is right now and perform the upgrades or propose a suite of upgrades to the homeowners to decide where they want to make the changes to bring the performance of their home up and the energy performance down. Currently, we are in the early stages of rolling out the Energy Trust of Oregon's existing homes energy performance score. For some time, there has been one for the new homes program. It is just recently, through extensive industry input, including input from the U.S. Department of Energy, who came and visited, and Energy Trust of Oregon compared their home energy score to the energy performance tool that Earth Advantage and Cake Systems has produced, and ultimately that score was deemed to be the most accurate and appropriate for our industry, for Oregon. And so we support it. Currently, the energy home performance contractors are the ones who are doing existing homes energy performance scores. There are others that are doing them on new homes. But we see an industry where ultimately others well beyond home performance contractors will be able to offer these scores provide these asset ratings to homes. And that will be critical as we start to think about rolling out energy performance scores to all homes across the state. So I'm also happy to answer any questions. We're looking forward to being involved as this legislation moves forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Before, I know there's a number of questions from the dais, but I'm curious if one of you, perhaps you, Mr. Helsum, Heslam. Sorry, it's hard to get off the tongue. Could talk a little bit about some of the pilot projects that are in that are ongoing right now with Energy Trust of Oregon in areas where you've rolled these out in real-world experiences.
Mm-hmm. So in Energy Trust territory, they started piloting the scoring on the new homes side in 2009. And over 2,000 homes have now received a score on the new homes side. In fact, at this point, in the city of Portland, over 40% of new homes that were built last year received a score as part of their process of being evaluated during construction. In the Bend market, it's over 30% of homes last year received an energy performance score during new construction. On the existing homes side, the Energy Trust has been doing testing of this since 2008, and as Mr. McCardrum mentioned, they actually did a comparison test with a DOE software tool, the home energy scoring tool. They actually compared three other software programs in an analysis with a private evaluation company to try and determine what would be the most effective tool to accurately represent this information to homeowners. All that culminated last spring with the decision on how to move forward into the marketplace, and then subsequently they worked over the course of last year with the home performance contractors about training for that effort and actually refining the training. So it's not just about technically understanding, because the contractors have a really good technical understanding about how to look at a house, assess its efficiency, and make recommendations, but also because this is intended to be a market mechanism, training for those contractors to understand how to talk about this information with homeowners, how to use it as something to really talk to them about, this is the performance of your home now. You could be improving the performance of your home. How to compare this information with maybe their utility bill information. So it really has been a comprehensive effort in terms of understanding how this could be delivered into the marketplace so that it becomes a market mechanism. Thank you.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Heslam, tell me now, on a new home, do you need to actually visit the location of the new home, or can you glean what information you need off of the blueprints for the proposed construction of the new home?
Under the system as it is practiced, you actually do visit the home to actually confirm that what has been represented in the documents for the home has actually been installed in the home. So that's a verification visit. And with the Energy Trust's program, they actually have two visits. They have one visit during the rough stage of construction for the things you can't see once drywall goes up, and then another visit at the end of construction once all the equipment's in place and you can record that information. Representative Johnson.
And then I'm assuming there's a system follow-up to ensure that those systems are operating as they should, or that they've been installed correctly. That it's called the verification of performance, I guess, if you will, for the furnaces, for HVAC systems, all of the above, and so forth. But there also can be a human component involved, obviously, too, in terms of how those systems actually perform. Some people like their thermostat set at 72. Some are going to like that set at 68, 67, and all that can be an intangible. It's pretty hard to quantify, I would guess.
That's a great point, Representative Johnson. And one of the reasons that the unit of measurement that was selected for this was actually just what the total energy consumption estimated for the building is. That was chosen so that occupants that did know that could compare their actual usage back against the score information. So they could know, much like I knew driving my Prius down here today, that I was not getting 52 miles to the gallon because I was going a little too fast because I was late. But you would know that if the score was telling you what your total energy usage was for the year, you could then, if you were inclined to monitor your behavior, you could compare what your usage was compared to what it would be under standard operating conditions. That certainly is something that the people who really are interested in monitoring their energy use and the performance of their building could utilize this type of information in that way. Thank you.
Representative Dembrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Ms. Aslam, just following up on the pilot project. How is the pilot project being funded, you know, currently, and, you know, those assessments, who's paying for those? And how are you, as a pilot project, you're testing certain assumptions, right? And so how have the assumptions been playing out? What are you learning from this that can apply to a larger audience?
So in addition to the pilots that work we've been doing with the Energy Trust of Oregon here in Oregon, we've also been piloting this in various parts of the country. So in some cases, we were doing pilots that were paid for with federal money, and sometimes we were working on pilots that were paid with state monies or local county monies. On the new homes program that's been in place since 2009, it rides along, or it is integrated with green building and energy efficiency certification programs. So there are market-based fees paid by builders in order to get their building certified. And the energy performance score is a component of that delivery mechanism. They can get a standalone energy performance score delivered, or they can get an energy performance score that comes along with, say, an Earth Advantage certification or an Energy Star certification. I would say that most builders, once they decide to go forward with getting some sort of energy efficiency designation for their building, tend to go all the way and go all the way for a full certification rather than just going for the reward of showing the energy performance score. But we have had some builders sort of go for the, it's kind of the race for the top to get the lowest number possible. Like, we actually did see that take place faster than I had expected to see it in the market, where they were battling to get as low a number as they could out there. And you may have heard the term net zero thrown around about houses that's becoming a more popular term. But a zero on this scale would be a net zero home. And this has been a way that people could show how close they're getting to that point.
Mm-hmm. Just following up, and is there any correlation with, the likelihood of these homes to sell or follow-up customer satisfaction with, what benefits they accrued from this process?
So from homes that solely got an energy performance score alone, we don't have that data. There has been data in the Northwest for homes that received an overall Energy Star certification or a green building certification. And there was a study done a few years ago that actually showed faster sales cycles and a premium on those sales. There was actually a more recent study done nationally by the National Association of Home Builders that was just released 2 weeks ago that showed last year in their survey work nationally, 9 out of 10 home buyers stated that they would be willing to pay a 2-3% premium for a home that clearly had energy efficiency features above another home. I say clearly because until you have this type of information on homes that provides clarity, it's very difficult for the homeowner, home buyer in the marketplace to actually know which home they would like to spend 2-3% more on. Thank you.
Representative Reardon.
Now I'd like to ask, how does the square footage of the fit into it?
Sure. Thank you, Representative Reardon. Since this the score is really an estimate of the total energy use of the home for a year, the size of the home will be directly related to that. In the way the information is translated to the homeowner, in a graphical way, it shows the estimated energy use of this home compared to what is the estimated energy use of an average home of your size in your part of the state. So we give them context. So instead of, for instance, with your car, you expect a very large SUV to maybe only get 16 or 17 miles to the gallon, right? But But you know that because you know large SUVs are going to get somewhere between 8 and 20 miles to the gallon, just because we have familiarity with that now. The same way this would tell you a large home might be using somewhere between, you know, 80 to 120 million BTUs of energy per year. And you would have a benchmark that says, oh, in, say, Coos Bay, the typical energy use for a house of your size is 110 million BTUs per year. Your house is 100. So there's, it's been thought through in the way of how do you take a number that's solely a number, put it in context, and then provide the information of what if you did the improvements that are available? Maybe you could move that from 100 million BTUs a year to 70. Now you would be much better than the typical home.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Whitson.
I was wondering if you could discuss the typical cost of upgrading an existing home, say a 1,750-foot square home, into the top energy-saving capacity that you would be rated at. I mean, are we looking at $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 or
$40,000? Mr. Chairman and Representative Whitson. Again, I'm Don McCojum, Executive Director of the Home Performance Guild of Oregon, and speaking from my experience and observing the work that my members do and that that they do through the Energy Trust of Oregon or through a companion program, Clean Energy Works Oregon, a typical job that is pushing the envelope in terms of, for example, up to 30%. Mm-hmm. Energy savings, you know, a reduction of 30%, could cost anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000. So that's still 30% energy savings, and that's pretty bold. I mean, that's a large ticket upgrade, and it would move the dial on an energy performance score. But these are, and every home is going to be different, though, too, because some homes have greater opportunity for those energy savings than others.
The typical home in my district right now is selling for $117,000. So we're looking at about 10% of the value of the home to bring it up to a 30% level. And I'm concerned about, we have a lot of elderly and poor in my district, and towards the end of their lives, they often have to sell their homes in order to move into a rest home or someplace else. And I would view this as fairly discriminatory against the poor and the elderly, because their homes, if they are unable to upgrade them to this status, they're going to be at a lower ability to sell those homes. And so I would think that this would be very difficult for those who don't have the funds to upgrade their homes in order to sell them.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Whitsett, thank you for that question. We look forward to the Home Performance Guild of Oregon looks forward to working with the committee on this piece of legislation and any other complementary legislation. I would just reiterate that every single home, you know, location matters, but infrastructure matters as well. So if a home is, in some cases, those homes will have the greatest opportunity for low cost upgrades. Depending on, you know, if it is, but depends on where it is. I mean, but that is certainly a consideration that we need to go into.
Thank you.
Representative?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the Representative Whitson's question gets to what is of some concern. Under this approach, we take information that currently the seller may want to keep confidential. Can we force that person to disclose it to the buyer? And that's what this says has to happen. But that doesn't mean that the buyer would go ahead and either force the seller to put new windows in, or that the buyer, upon forcing the seller's price down, would ever put the new windows in. It merely means that what used to be confidential isn't. And the person who is going to buy the house, we heard earlier, might not be able to force the seller to allow an energy audit, but that's something that could be negotiated. Under this future that you're suggesting, we would assign a number at sale, but if you were truly interested in making this happen, we would ask that those numbers be disclosed whenever they were obtained onto some sort of a database. And thus, then folks could be advised of the fact that they were inappropriately consuming energy, which is a problem that all of us then end up paying for. So one can see the concern that people would have about this if you were worried about confidentiality. Now, that's what I'm anxious to hear is what the broader benefit is that would suggest that we force people to give that confidential write-up and at the sale, because that's what this bill suggests.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benz, if I might take on, and I'd like to also address Representative Whitsitt's question. We've been talking a lot about the use of this score at the time of sale. Most of our work is not at the time of scale, at the time of sale. It's at the time of someone looking at their energy bills and saying, this is costing me a lot of money, especially the poor and the elderly who are finding that it's very difficult for them to keep up. In Klamath Falls, it gets very cold. And if you have to keep your house warm and you're elderly, so you're home all the time, you can't turn the heat down during the daytime, then you're especially vulnerable to the problem of higher energy costs. And what we're trying to do, and there are obviously state monies, and this is another issue, and we were talking about this with Representative Bailey, there are state monies, tax credits, et cetera, for folks to help retrofit their houses. We're finding that a lot of our work in Portland is with low-income neighborhoods, because that's where the old houses are in Portland, and low-income elderly. So we don't think we're discriminating by this at all. We think that we're assisting people who are having difficulty maintaining the high energy costs that they're in, using that money for other things besides paying it to the utility companies or to the natural gas company.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to learn a little bit more about the asset rating. I'm familiar with the LEEDS code, which of course gets into, as you work your way up the LEEDS, the various platforms from silver, gold, platinum, ultimately the net zeros you're talking about, you know, it moves far beyond simply thermal efficiency. You get into many more intangibles, like where your materials come from, what type of materials they are. I would say behavior modifications. If you have a bike rack, that gets you points as well, and that's how you can get the net zero. You need all those little tweaks you can get. So is the asset score simply built on thermal deliverables, or does it get into the minutiae, as I would refer to it, on some of these characteristics of a home?
Chair Bailey, Vice Chair Johnson, it's looking at the thermal boundary of the building and the equipment that's in the building, the heating equipment, the water heating equipment, air conditioning equipment, if that is present, the major appliances in the home, the lighting in the home. It is not looking at the TVs that you have plugged in or the plug loads that are like specific to that occupant. But it does look at the overall shell, including the air leakage rate of the building and duct leakage.
It doesn't disincentivize the use of Oregon-produced wood fiber products? Please say yes.
It doesn't disincentivize. I can't even say that word.
That's okay.
Sorry. Representative Johnson.
Thank you very much for this panel. I appreciate it. And we'll call up Wendy Gerlitz, Gary Bauer, and Sean Jillians, please. And I think you're all going to have sort of different testimonies, so we'll take one at a time. Please.
Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Wendy Gerlitz. I'm a senior policy associate for the Northwest Energy Coalition. We're a nonprofit organization that works throughout the Pacific Northwest to promote clean energy policies. We have a very diverse membership, including utilities, environmental organizations, businesses that work on energy efficiency and renewables, low-income consumer groups. So it's a diverse coalition of interests that all come together to promote energy efficiency and renewables in the Northwest. We spend a lot of time working on energy efficiency because we believe it is the cheapest and best resource that we have available to us in this region, and that is the reason why I'm here today. We believe that an energy performance score offers an opportunity to promote energy efficiency in Oregon, and we would like to support the development of an energy performance score here in the state. I'm going to speak for a minute to a question that came up about the broader benefits that we see arising from a policy such as this. In Oregon, the opportunities for energy efficiency are still great. Even though we've done a lot, there's a lot of opportunity out there in the state, and particularly within the residential sector, there is a lot of opportunity. It's been estimated that there are over 600,000 homes in Oregon that could benefit from an energy upgrade. That translates into about $8 billion in economic potential for the state, tens of thousands of jobs, and about 1.8 million tons of carbon emissions prevented through that work. We believe an energy performance score can help us get into some of these homes and unlock that potential by providing information to homeowners and encouraging them to take voluntary actions to reduce their energy use in their homes, which would also benefit those homeowners in that home by reducing their bills. So we believe this could be a promising policy for the state. We look forward to working with you all on coming up with a policy that would best suit the needs of Oregon, including particularly consumer protections and low-income consumer protections. We feel that is a very key part of crafting this policy, and would look forward to helping and bringing our membership opportunities and expertise to bear on that point, and also just creating an effective policy that will work to unlock some of that potential that we see out there in the residential sector.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Gerlitz? Okay, perhaps they'll think of some. Mr. Bauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural, we're a natural gas distribution company. Energy efficiency is very important to us. It's something we work very hard on. We believe it's important to get more and accurate information in the hands of our customers. We do that both ourselves, and we do it in conjunction with the Energy Trust of Oregon. A concern we have with this legislation is, in part, exactly what would the energy score make up the energy score, and how would you develop that? As has been mentioned already by a number of panelists, members, the Energy Trust has done a lot of work on methodology, on how to model it, on exactly how you present the information, and we've worked with them over a couple of years on that now. And so one of our concerns is not starting over and not recreating something that that a lot of people put a lot of time into. And I know there's some other discussions about which agencies are appropriate, how you do that. So we just like to participate in any process you have going forward. I might mention, since Sean's here, that the other thing, too, I think for everybody is to try to figure out whether we have enough of an infrastructure in place on a statewide basis to deliver this kind of information in a sense that meets the cost-effectiveness questions that people have raised. Again, we've worked with the Energy Trust. We think they've put together a good model for some of this. But recognize that that's just in our service territory, and we don't serve statewide. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jillians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors, in opposition to the bill, probably not surprising. Unfortunately for most of you, I think you've heard our spiel on opposing mandatory energy audits or performance scores at the point of sale. For those of you who haven't heard my spiel, the governor did put together a task force on this issue. Actually, the legislature mandated it back in 2009 in Senate Bill 79. It was the governor's task force on energy performance scores. We met for about 6 months on a bi-monthly basis and came out with a nice report that was delivered to you all at the end of 2010. I will definitely send you all another copy of that. It was a broad group of stakeholders involved in that, 13 in total. A majority of the folks, once they heard all the information on this, were opposed to mandatory energy audits at the point of sale. That being said, I think there were a lot of good recommendations in there about what a voluntary system would look like, what we could do to regulate auditors as we go forward. I'd be happy to work with the chair and committee members on those sort of things. I think to get to some of our opposition, and you've heard some of the concerns as far as cost, infrastructure, once you're mandating it at the point of sale, it also tends to stigmatize older homes. It makes it more difficult for them to sell. You hear a lot, and I heard a lot during the task force about this is just like miles per gallon. Homes are a little more durable than cars. You don't see a lot of 100-year-old cars still driving down the street. You do see a lot of 100-year-old homes still in existence. And so, I don't think that's really an apples to apples. It's more apples to oranges sort of comparison. I think the best testimony I heard today is that the Portland market is booming and that you can't request that. I would assure you all in other parts of the state, not so robust, and certainly a buyer could request an energy audit if they wanted one in a transaction, if that was something that they were serious about. With that, Mr. Chair, I know we've had conversations before. I'm happy to work on possible amendments, how we could work together on voluntary incentive-based solutions to this problem. We certainly support energy efficiency. We want to make sure that folks actually in their homes have the opportunity to increase the efficiency of their homes, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate the offer of help, Mr. Jillians. And I'm curious, actually, since you mentioned it, are there issues out there that you see that could potentially be areas where you would be willing to work on that might pave the way for some sort of information gathering or a larger upgrade effort around existing homes?
Great question, Mr. Chair. I think there are certain areas that we could look, and I think the Energy Trust and the pilot projects you've heard about are great projects to kind of talk about incentivizing consumers to market their properties with that. I think the obvious solution is to offer some sort of incentive, financial incentive for folks to make the improvements, to do those sort of things. It's a fairly tough budget environment, as you all know. I think that part would be more difficult, but it is something that when I lobbied in Nevada, we actually did look at that sort of stuff where you got a property tax abatement on new construction for energy efficient homes and things like that, and commercial buildings, actually, that's something I probably should have raised too. Commercial buildings are a much larger user of energy than residential, and this bill obviously doesn't address that.
Thank you. Other questions, Representative Denbrough?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Sean, so I'm new to this, and so I would actually be interested in hearing from you just very quickly. I assume that you feel, or your association feels, that having a score available to a consumer at the time of sale would deter sales, but I mean, it would presumably privilege the sale of a home that had a good score. It wouldn't discourage a buyer from buying a home, period, would it? I mean, how does it modify behavior?
Mr. Chair, Representative Denbrough, great question about the modification of behavior, because I think that's the ultimate goal of that, is to modify people's behavior, and that's why you hear more of the miles per gallon thing, because it was driving the car companies to increase miles per gallon on a consumer sort of thing. I think there's, and I hope I didn't reflect that our association is some way opposed to buyers having the score. What we're opposed to is the state mandating that it has to be done at the point of sale. If a buyer wants to request it, absolutely. If a seller wants to show how energy efficient their home is and offer that, we certainly support that. We actually think that's the right direction for this to go, of to have some sort of market-based incentive where sellers are actually disclosing, here's my more energy efficient home. When there's green mortgages or any energy efficient mortgages, that they could disclose that the buyer might be able to qualify for that. I think we're very supportive of that. It's just when you look at a mandated energy audit at the point of sale, that's where we have concerns.
Mr. Johnson.
Sean, follow-up to
the type of disclosure forms that already exist at the point of purchase and so forth, seems to me that there's quite a wealth of information that's already entailed in those, i.e. regarding types of windows that exist in homes. If a person, you know, is buying an older home, they're going to be able to know whether that house has single pane windows or thermal panes. That's disclosed, I believe. Whether there's insulation in the walls, whether how much insulation may be in the ceiling, whether you've got forced air, gas, or a wood stove or whatever. Those types of things are already available in the disclosure form to try to help the buyer understand quite a bit about the potential energy efficiency measures that are there already or not, and how they may perform for the buyer and so forth. But I just like your feedback on, you know, the level of disclosure that already is available for consumers who are out there actually trying to purchase a home.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I think the seller's statutory disclosure, and Representative Benz mentioned it's 6 to 8 pages. It does have a number of details in there, but I think where you actually go to the next step and where informed buyers really learning about how a house will perform is in the home inspection process. And it's certainly the advice of all of our members to buyers that they have a home inspection prior to purchasing it. I think there's been some discussion as we move forward about, you know, incorporating energy efficient features into home inspections and what that might look like. I think it really varies right now as far as the level of detail that you would get when you couple the statutory seller's disclosure with a quality home inspection.
Okay, seeing no further questions, thank you very much. And finally, once again, Mr. John Chandler.
Finish a solitary game, Victor.
You see, Mr. Chandler, we are protecting other panelists from your brilliance. We don't want to make anybody else look bad, Mr. Chandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought you were implying I might bite them. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here on 2793, expressing grave concern, if not outright opposition, to the bill as drafted. By way of background, though, from the new construction standpoint, we've endorsed the voluntary use of energy performance scores. I was personally on the board of directors at Earth Advantage when it first was spun off as a separate company. They created, along with Energy Trust, the first energy performance score in the state. I have, as I mentioned in my earlier testimony, one staff person who's full-time working on green building programs, another staffer who's working on energy code and other building code issues. So we, on the new construction side, have been very supportive of moving towards a voluntary program for our builders to tell their consumers, here's what a new home does. And we do that, frankly, because the Oregon Energy Code, as written, is fairly rambunctious. And we think that some way of, that's a technical term, of course, to setting ourselves apart, new construction, from other options in the marketplace is important. Having said that, we have steadfastly opposed any sort of mandate, either for new or for existing homes, for a variety of reasons I'll happily go into. The bill as written, we would have real trouble with. If the committee decides to work on this issue in the going forward, more than happy to participate again. We've taken part in every work group that's been come along on this topic for quite a while now. We think it's very important that people have information. We disagree that the state needs to require it. We think it should be done through incentives and other programs, Energy Trust and otherwise, that are in the marketplace. Good issue, but probably not the right bill to move it forward. Be glad to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Chandler? Okay, thanks again. Wowed us once again. Seeing no one further wishes to testify, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2793 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2801. Adam?
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, House Bill 2801 allows public purpose monies invested in cost-effective local energy conservation for updating non-residential buildings' energy efficiency to be used for whole building energy efficiency assessments. Provides a list of what whole building energy efficiency assessments include.
Yeah, and I'd like to call forward Mr. Stan Price and Jeff Bissonnette. Mr. Bissonnette, we're just going to get a plaque for you on one of these chairs. We'll just put it on there. We appreciate all your work on multiple bills.
It's my dream to be up here with Mr. Chandler. So,
keep one of these days, you can keep hoping, Mr. Bissonnette.
And I'm a poor second to that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Stan Price, Executive Director of the Northwest Energy Efficiency Council. We're an industry association that represents businesses that provide energy-efficient products and services, and my association supports House Bill 2801. Cost-effectiveness is now and should remain a critically important criteria for judging the investment for public purpose funds in Oregon. Only really good projects, really strong investment criteria ought to be funded under the public purpose requirements in the state. And what this bill does, I think, is make just a small but we think an important change in the methodology for calculating the cost effectiveness of that investment. And I want to just walk you through, if I can, a couple of simple examples. Rather than evaluating the cost effectiveness of each individual measure associated with improving the performance of a particular building, what this change would allow us to do is to think more in a more aggregate way over a package of measures and to do the analysis based on a number of measures that might improve the performance within a building. This change, we think, would better align the cost effectiveness methodology with the way building owners think about energy use in their buildings. After all, they get one utility bill, so they don't pay a utility bill for their windows and a utility bill for their lights and utility bill for their hot water or for a single fan motor or pump motor. They think in aggregate. And so we think this change will help better align the notion of how the market thinks about energy use in their buildings with the opportunities for improvement. And ultimately, we think that'll potentially deepen the amount of energy savings that we get in each project as we sort of change that frame of reference from one individual measure to a group of measures. And I think David Haslam broke the ice on using car analogies, so I have one here. If you took your car into the mechanic to think about what the cost would be to improve its performance, you wouldn't want the mechanic to provide you the cost, or you wouldn't think about the cost spark plug by spark plug and radiator hose by timing belt. You would look at it in terms of a package of improvements that are going to you're going to evaluate to improve the performance of the car. And that's basically what we're attempting, what this House Bill 2801 is attempting to do here, is to think about the building holistically and evaluate the quality of that investment based on a package of improvements. So we're supporting 2801. We certainly are willing to work with the committee and other stakeholders in the room to continue to work to improve its language. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Bissonnette.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Jeff Bissonnette from the Citizens Utility Board, here to say some cautious words of approval for the bill. We are cautious because cost-effectiveness is an ever-changing concept. As different resources change, different things become cost-effective, whether you look at them measure by measure or even on a whole building. And so we are cautious about putting sort of cost-effectiveness measure in statute where we have to come back to the legislature to get those standards changed. Right now, they're mainly handled administratively, which gives us a great deal of flexibility. That said, the whole house approach, which we which we very much support, is permissive for the PUC, and because of that, we can we have no problem with this bill moving forward. If the committee chooses to do some more work on it or raise some other concepts, we're happy to continue to be part of the conversation to make sure that this bill serves residential ratepayers. Thank you. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Must have done a fantastic job. Thank you both very much. Appreciate it. Seeing no one further wishes to testify, closing the public hearing on House Bill 2801. And open public hearing, don't go too far, Mr. Bissonnette, on House Bill 2817. And And Adam?
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, House Bill 2817 modifies the definition of real estate appraisal activities to include issuing an opinion on the value of energy efficiency associated with any building located on real property.
Mr. Bissonnette?
For the record, Jeff Bissonnette, Citizens Utility Board. Just wanted to say general words of support for this bill. Again, policy working in conjunction with ratepayer investments, good thing to do. The committee decides to do more with this bill, want to be part of the discussion. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Whitsitt.
How do you quantify the term value associated with energy efficiency?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I think it's you value it basically based on the impact both to the system overall, i.e. the amount of kilowatt hours that you are able to sort of incent or purchase, and the value to the ratepayer. There is a value for the individual ratepayer based on the appraisal of a house that you're going to buy. So you can look at it in both those ways, and I can go into further detail. That would be sort of the quickest answer.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2817. Colleagues, just to give you a little bit of a roadmap of where we're headed here, we've had four bills today that are touching different parts of the elephant, I guess. We are convening a work group that I believe will be meeting this week to talk about some of the different issues that are contained within these various bills. It is my intention that we work on a bill, it's a larger concept that will seek to pave the way for some of the baseline issues that need to be addressed as we look at both residential and some commercial energy efficiency measures. I think you're likely to see whole building cost effectiveness in that value and appraisals will probably be under discussion. Who is certified and how under these voluntary programs to assess scores even in a voluntary program where that information might live. So I think those are some of the issues that are going to be up in the work group, and there will be more on this in front of the committee to come. But I would welcome all of your feedback individually or from any of the other stakeholders in the room. So with that, having exhausted our agenda earlier than I anticipated.
Let's bring Chandler back.
Yeah. You want to come back? You got a few good jokes to tell? All right. Committee's adjourned.
Put on that.